and I think it was a great decision. And businesses will only do well if you got great people. There's great people out there. So I felt great about it coming out here, and David Dome, it's quite a while ago, but I have great memories about it. I'd like to give you a little overview of my life, and then I'd like to inspire you. There's a lot of things we can do. When I look down the road, I think Canada could be a role model for the whole world. So my life is really a question of fate and circumstances, to be at the right time, at the right place, with the right ingredients. And it seemed I've always been at the right place, at the right time, etc., etc. But at the same time, I do say, it doesn't matter how smart you are. If the stars are not aligned, it won't work. There were times when I was hungry. Hungry not because I wanted to lose weight. I was hungry. I didn't have money to buy food. And those things leave very deep impressions. It's deeply burned into the soul. So I come from a working class factory. I had a great education. I was taught a great trade, tool and die making. Tool and die making for everything. There's not very few things are made by hand now for everything. Might it be a bump on a car, might it be a writing pen, might it be a glass or whatever you need, a tool to make things. So I learned that. And I said early on, that was a question of fate and circumstances. I wanted to see the world, and I applied to a visa to South Africa, the United States, Australia, and Canada. Sometimes I'm a little tough on the Canadian bureaucracy, but I say they're still the best. They came first through with the visas, so I wound up in Canada, right? Things were pretty tough in '54. It was a great depression. But after a while, I find a job in a small tool shop. There were about 10 people. After a few months, the owner said, "Frank, you're doing a great job. I want you to be a partner of mine." I just swallowed a little bit, and I felt pretty good about it. So he was a nice guy, but he never wrote it down. After about another half a year, because he didn't really make a commitment, I left there. I found a job. I got paid more, and I left it. I rented a very simple room. The washrooms were out on the hallway, so I saved up the money. So I saved up about a $5,000 cash, and in '57, when you go back, '57, $5,000, I guess you could buy a small farm with $5,000. So it was a fair amount of money. So I rented a garage and put a few used machines on the down payment, and out I went hustling. I went to the factories, and I said, "I'm very good in solving problems, and if I can't solve the problems, they don't have to pay me." So after 1 month, I hired somebody. After a year, about 10 people. After 20, after 2 years, about 20 people. After 5 years, about 5,000. After 10 years, about 75,000. After 15 years, about 100,000, 170,000 employees. Imagine, I built from a small garage a company with 170,000 employees, over 400 factories, 420 factories in 34 different countries. You know, when we're young, we hustle a bit to make some monies, that we can live in dignity, that we can be helpful to the family. And I have done all those things. The point I want to make is, I could live in 34 different countries with dignity. I chose Canada. It's a great, great country. I have worries. You know, every country goes to different stages. The world doesn't stand still. There's a constant evolutionary process. think the important thing is we got to be aware of it. But I should start out, how was it possible to build a company with 170,000 employees? So let me backtrack for a minute. After 2 years, when I said I had about 20 people, I noticed my foreman was a little different. So I said to him, his name was Herman, I said, Herman, what's the matter with you lately? Well, he said, Frank, I'm thinking of starting my own business. He was my first employee, he was my foreman. So I said, well, I sympathize with that you could start your own business, but let's talk tomorrow. Maybe we can find a better way or something which would satisfy you. So anyway, that evening I was talking to myself, and I said to myself, if that foreman's got to leave me, I got to do all the work myself. I didn't like that much. The second reason was, if that foreman's going to leave me, and I would hire a new foreman, and if I wouldn't teach the new foreman how business is run, I still got to do all the work. So the third reason then was, if I teach a foreman how a business is run, after 1 or 2 years, the same thing will happen. They most likely want to start out on their own, right, if they really know the business. So anyway, to make a long story short, I said to him, look, why don't we open up a new factory? I said, you get 1/3, no more overtime. And by the end of the year, we take some monies out pro rata, and we leave some monies in for further growth. So he said, you mean that? I said, yes. So we went right away to a lawyer, wrote it down. The guy hustled like crazy. That was his factory. So So I said to him, that business is easy. I took the next foreman, the next foreman, the next foreman, the next foreman. All of a sudden, had about 8 factories, right? And they all were humming, they were all functioning well, etc., etc. I still was a young guy, right? But then I saw this huge market out there, and I said, look, I gotta do something where I also could let the workers participate, okay? Which I did then, and I came to the conclusion perhaps it should be a public company. I merged my company with Magna Electronics. Magna Electronics at the time was a company, a public company trading on the Toronto Stock Exchange. And so I was the the largest shareholder. I didn't have to have quite control of it. And that was I was kind of green when it came to public markets. But anyway, at the later stage, I said I don't really like it. I think the board of directors was more interested in driving the stock prices up rather than having the best. Anyway, I said I'm not going to be part of it. I sell my shares. They pleaded, directors pleaded, I should sell the shares to them, which I did. And I took back a note, but they couldn't come up with the money, so I've never sued anybody in my life. But anyway, I said, listen, you guys, you got to resign. And I put a new board together, and from there on, things just started to go sky high, right? I said to the shareholders, I gave up about a quarter of my shares if they would vote for a multiple share thing here, which they did. So I had absolutely control. A few years later, I put in a corporate constitution at Magna. The foremost principle in the corporate constitution was, I predetermined what I do with the profits. The first reason was 20% of the profits go to the shareholders, 10% of the profits go to the employees, over and above their wages, half in cash, half in shares. 6% went to management. 7% went to research. Research is the foundation for the future. And 2% went to charity. When I put in this program, this corporate constitution, Our profit rose about 40% the first year. The profit rose in the second year 100%. In the third year 200%. So the message I want to get across is, if you get employees involved in a tangible way, I release an energy of incredible. It's incredible if we can do that in Canada, right? So let me, I'd like to simplify things. Well, pretty well all the people agree, might it be politicians, might it be businessmen, most people will agree, if the economy doesn't work, nothing else will work. You cannot feed the hungry, you cannot look after the most fragile people, the elderly, the sick and the handicapped. But you know, interesting enough, we don't talk what drives the economy. The economy is driven by three forces. Smart managers, hardworking employees, and investors. Basically, all three have a right to the outcome, which is profits. The message I want to get across all the time is, workers have a moral right to some of the profits they help to generate. Without workers, you cannot change. You cannot create profits. So that is a very important message. So Magna is more than a business, it's a culture. I call it the fair enterprise system. The fair enterprise system is a forerunner for an economic charter of rights. The basic philosophy on fair enterprise is the human charter of rights alone is not sufficient. We have to fortify it with an economic charter of rights. Economic charters of rights would lead to economic democracies, and economic democracies are the basis for democracy itself. But you know, when you look at the core problem, there's a huge divide between the very wealthy and the working class, and that is getting stronger and stronger, right? I spent a lot of time with Washington. At one time I had a meeting with the leader of the House, Mitch McConnell. I said, Mitch, America did great by the free enterprise system. I said, Mitch, we got to do everything to preserve free enterprise. Without free enterprise, there's no free society. But so free enterprise got a major problem. So Mitch, the president of the Senate, said, what do you mean, what problem? I said, more and more money is held by fewer and fewer. I said, the free enterprise system or the capitalistic system, if you leave it that way, it'd be self-destroying. If we fail to make capitalists out of the workers, we haven't got a society. So the message again, I want to say, the world has always been dominated by the golden rule. Who has the gold makes the rule. It's still that way. Okay? Now you don't. Before you could see the kings, right? They had a castle up the hill. The king taxed the farmers too much, he had revolutions. But you don't see the kings anymore. They might be in Hawaii, Beverly Hills, and Rivera. You don't see them. But the question is, how can we dismantle the chains of domination? Not by destructive revolutions, by a revolution of the mind. That's what I want to talk to you. I want to get a grassroots coalition of concerned citizens going, right? It does not solve anything to point fingers whose fault it is. Okay? Basically, we all a little bit to blame. And it does not help to come in with a chainsaw, right? It does not. So I could never build a Magna anymore, right? Our bureaucracy climbed like crazy. I still remember about 50 years ago, the first computers came on the market. The slogan was, if you got one of those, you could eliminate a total office for. When I look around now in the cities, I see 20 times more office buildings in any city, whether it be Toronto, Ottawa, Montreal, New York, Los Angeles. It's, what do you do in those in office towers? They don't make products in there. It's regulations, 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 regulations. We're over-regulated. And I'm saying it's not the fault of the bureaucrats. In a civilized society, every citizen got a right to find a job, whatever the openings are. It's the system is to blame. Politics, politicians can't solve the problem because politics is that way. If you come up with a new idea, you'll be defeated because you could be criticized. It just doesn't. And when you look back in history, I think Churchill is recognized as one of the great statesmen. He always said, damn democracy, you know, it's so cumbersome. But at the same time said, there's still no better system than that. But before he died the last few years, he was talking quite frequently. He said, we need a house of, a chamber of citizens, because the politicians alone can't do it. What I would recommend, you know, I have a certain age, I have no peer pressure, luckily. So I understand there's one person sitting here which is older than me. Congratulations. Yeah. Okay. I'll speak with you and get your secrets. Okay. The message I want to get across. If we could reverse and get back to a Canada like 40, 50, 60 years ago, there was a concern when we built the factory, safety, and we need the engineering stamp that it doesn't break down with the snow load. And we had all the thing here. But now, just let me, I want to put a farmer's market, huh? I got 3 years of waiting for a permit. He meant the first thing he got back after a few months, I said, well, that doesn't conform to the bylaws. I said, what? Well, the bylaw says we only allow 3,000 square feet for a farmer's market. Do you want a 5,000? That's you against the bylaw. If the bureaucrats would say how many potatoes, whatever would sell, I mean, it's just amazing. But it's not, again, it's not. It's the system. You know, I want to tell the bureaucrats, look, you got kids. You got what do we leave them behind? You know, the interest payments we have to pay now on a daily basis for the debt Canada has, it's 160 million. Imagine, every day, and it's climbing. So what do we leave, our kids behind, right? So that is, so I basically developed what I would call a 7-1 program, nothing to do with politics. I have conservative friends, liberal friends, NDP friends, Green Party friends. I'd like to convince them, look, for the sake of the country, for the love of the country, let's leave politics aside, endorse a program which is purely economics. And I quickly will rattle off the 7 points. One is, no country should borrow monies. You know, when we know, every housewife knows, she cannot spend more than what her husband brings in on a weekly basis or whatever. If she spends more, they wind up in a poor house. Every farmer knows, he cannot spend more than what he gets for the crop, what he has on a yearly basis. If he spends more, he loses the farm. Our politician, there has to be a discipline too. Huh? So basically, I recommend over a 20-year period, so nobody could say that's a chainsaw thing here, over 20-year, a few percentage every year, and in 20 years, Canada will be debt-free. That's easily achievable. The next thing is, we gotta reduce the bureaucracy. Okay, and I'm not faulting thing, and no bureaucrat would have to worry, there would be no layoffs. But say, there'd be a hiring freeze for 10 years, and in 10 years we would have 50% of the bureaucracy. In 40 years ago, we had maybe 50% of the bureaucracy what we have now, but it would be a step back, and the bureaucracy would have a percentage of the GDP, right? That would be a thing. The third thing is, you got to look in the tax code. It's a book that thick, huge book with thousands and thousands and thousands of paragraphs in there. One is more convoluted than the other. You know, when I ran Magna, I had about 20 lawyers on the one side of my office and 20 financial specialists on the other side. So I went to the lawyers first. I want to do XXX. Is that within the law? After a few days, yeah, it's within the law. I went over to the financial group and said, what's the tax treatment on that? Well, after a few days, they say, look, it's so gray, we can't, but they're specialists downtown. So we sent the thing downtown. We got a big bill after 2 weeks, and they say, it could be either way, it's gray, we can't. That's totally, and keep in mind, I had maybe some of the smartest financial. So we have a tax system which is so convoluted, it serves special interest groups. Think about who's getting the 160 million every day. Okay. So anyway, we need an access to when you finish high school, you should be able to fill out your own thing. I have notes on everything. If people have an interest, I give them. I could leave the SEM1 program or send it to you. But I recommend, let's say below 100,000, there's no tax, and for every few thousand. We increase 1%, right? If you make more, you pay more money. So if you make a million, then the tax would be 50%. If you make about 200,000, the tax might be only be 5 or 10%, right? So, but if you make more, you pay more. So the point three would be simplify a black and white tax system. The point four would be the law would stipulate that the right companies, the small companies, would be below 300 people, employees. Large companies would be above 300 employees. Small companies, large companies would have to pay a small percentage to the workers. Okay, that the law would stipulate you have to pay, right? A lot of business would say, gee, we don't want to be dictated, we pay taxes, and now we gotta, but they would make more monies. And I created a role model in clear terms. If it's a clear program, the workers really, you release an enormous energy. We could wipe out poverty, we could, you know, we, because, look, we got to realize if workers haven't got the monies, there's no purchasing power. The economy couldn't run. So business would make more monies, the workers would, if we get the employers involved. So anyway, point four would be large companies would have to pay a portion of their profits to the employers. The important thing now is point five. Point five would be pure free enterprise. Small businesses always have been the backbone of any country. Okay, we could create thousands of magnets, you know, with if we go about it the right way. So you take the toll of the red tape off, you don't get the bureaucracy. There's two rules would apply, workplace safety, and you cannot dump poison in your backyard. Those are the only two rules. Otherwise, yes, you need an engineering stamp if you build a building. Yes, you need you get specialized engineering, but not the bureaucracy, right? Okay. So that would be point five. Point six would be high school should integrate them. Then kids. We've got to expose kids to trades. So grade 11 and 12, kids would have to learn a trade, like four trades, every half a year different. It'd be a win-win-win for society, it'd be a win for the kids, That doesn't mean they couldn't go to university after, but let them decide. We gotta get where we start making things again. If there's a new building going up someplace, it's a warehouse. We import. We gotta get into making things again. That'd be a win-win for society, a win for the kids. They accumulate knowledge because in that age you don't know yourself, what you really want, and what. They still can go to university, but I think it's very important. Point seven is, which is very dear to my heart, huh? I've come very heavily in the agriculture, and my daughter was very blessed with a good mind, good health, and I said, gee, I could be of better service to society if I kind of get away from the big cars. I had the gut feeling that the greenhouse gases and that can't go on forever, right? I basically got out of the car business. Funny enough, I got back into the car business. The premier called me about 2 years ago and said, Frank, I got a problem. I said, what? He said, General Motors is closing. He said, you know the car industry, give me some advice. So I mapped something out. I had to go downtown a few times. And I very seldom went downtown, but the last two times when you go from the outskirts of Toronto, or from the 401, you know, most of the 401, when you go downtown, what used to take you half an hour will take you now 1 hour, is everything fine, but it could take 2 hours. So I was sitting in a traffic jam. What a waste of human energy, what a waste of non-renewable. And to breathe in, to inhale the carbon monoxide, what people do every day for a few hours going in, a few hours out. And they live in the high rises, there's no thing here, the air and the air, it's just sickening. But anyway, I decided to go because I noticed all the kids had allergies and stage 2 diabetics, so I wanted to go, which I did, not that way, I did. I want to produce and I produce foods without chemicals, because when we take a look, 95% of all the food eaten is produced by industrial farms. When you look in industrial farms, you see no more eagles fly. Why? There's no more rabbits. There's no more pheasants. We spray the pesticide, the fungicide. What do we spray? We kill everything. So all the kids have allergies, and we basically poison our kids. Okay, so the point seven is, no Canadian kid should go to school hungry. That means breakfast would have to be served. No Canadian kid should leave the school hungry. That means lunch is going to be served, and by law, that would have to be organic. So those are the 7 points. I hope you people, inspired your thinking. I hope you participate in the thing I want to set up in. I want to have, Canada's got 338 federal ridings. I would like to create 338 organized supports there with Coalition of Concerned Canadians, and which would embrace the 7-point program. It's pure economics, pure common sense. And I think if Canada would adopt that, I think Canada could be the role model. And you mentioned early on, Dean, like I said early on, I come from a working class background. I will never look down on it. My mission is to eliminate poverty, but the socialistic, communistic philosophies won't work. They're based on wealth distribution. First, you got to create wealth. Otherwise, there's nothing to distribute. So I think together, if you participate, you know, it's got to be a grassroots thing here. Together we. I see Canada as the last country where perhaps we could achieve that. I have great worries for the United States. The poverty in the inner cities is enormous. It's enormous. And there could be violent revolution. So we want to avoid any violence, any violent revolution. It's got to be a revolution of the mind, how can we go about it to bring it about. I would like to see that Canada is the first country in the world with an economic charter of rights. Okay, I hope I have provoked your mind. I hope you have wasted the time to come here. I hope we can work together and create this great coalition, create the grassroots thing here. And Dean knows more about it. Dean said he would like to be part of it. And I got the executive director here, which will have the thing. Anthony, can you say hi? Raise your hand. Yeah. He is the executive director, which I just got to tell Dean, for the next while that we do, we got to stay out of politics, yep. Which is pure economics, right? Because we want to embrace all the politicians, say, for the love of the country, let's agree on a few basic principles. If you got too many, you could never find. But the seven, we send it to you, you know, that's all, everything we do, we'll be available, and hopefully some of you might become participants and members of this coalition, and Dean and myself, we would be very happy now to you might have questions to answer them. Thank you.
Thanks, man.